The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to The Muskie 360 Podcast. I've got Ross Provost from Burning Eights on the line. How you doing, Ross?
Hey, great. It's great to be on the show. Appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. When, if you guys don't know Burning Eights, then you haven't been paying attention to the app, one. But you guys are just tearing it up. You're contributing. You've got a killer article that's on the app. You guys are contributing some really cool videos. And let's just jump right in, man. You just today, the day we're recording this, you put out a killer new Green Bay video, man. What's going on there?
Yeah, so that's one we filmed, obviously, in 2019, but we're just kind of cranking out a few videos that are left over from the past season, and that was it was a good weekend for us. I mean, a ton of action, and we had actually two of the Burning Eights boats going, so our buddy Joe was in one of his boat with his brothers, and then Jake and I were fishing together, and it was kind of cool because, I mean, we could kind of bounce information off each other as far as what was happening or what people were seeing. And I ended up getting my personal best pike out there, which at first I thought it was a big, you know, a nice size muskie by the way it hit, and, you know, the head shakes right away. But then, we finally netted it, and we were like, man, that is a big pike.
Yeah.
So that was cool to see. I mean, it was, you know, Jake and I always say to each other, it's like all these times and all these hours we put in muskie fishing, when are we going to get a big pike? And Green Bay finally kicked out one for us. And, Then it just kind of picked up from there. I mean, for Joe and his brothers, he got into some two solid, very, very solid fish that were hard fighting and heavy hitters on Green Bay. The muskies out there are a special breed, and he experienced it that day. So that was cool to see. It was a fun day, but there's actually two parts to that. So next week we're going to be rolling out the second part to that video. And we actually went 0-for-9, I think Jake and I did on muskies, but it was some crazy action.
Dude, that's cool though that you're going to put that out, because that's real, you know.
Right.
That's just real.
That's why we wanted to share it, because it's like we just couldn't do anything right that day. And
yeah.
But I mean, we were on fish. We were, you know, fishing weed edges, weed beds, and working where we needed to be, and the fish just lit up for, like, I don't know, it was probably like 2 hours straight. Just every time we were making this drift, we were hammering them, and it's like, it was like a catch-22. You were happy, because you were you were on fish, but you just could not stay hooked up. And they're either head shaking and they're off, and me and Jake are looking at each other like, "Is this real right now? Or are we dreaming?" You know,
right? Yeah.
But it's part of the sport.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, it's just one of those deals where you can do all the right things and you still don't get one in the net. I love it. I hate it for you. That's cool that you're putting the video out, but that's awesome. So people can see it and they go, hey, even professionals are struggling at times too. You know?
it happens.
It does. And you're talking about that big pike, your PB pike. It's just like, I've had plenty of musky days that turned into pike days because of stuff like that. I'm like, yeah. You
know? Oh yeah, for sure.
No complaints there. So that's going to be killer stuff. Obviously that'll be on the app. And then another thing we need to mention, you guys are going to be at the Muskie Expo.
Yes. Yeah. So March 6th, 7th, and 8th of 2020 here, we're going to be in Wausau, Wisconsin at the Wisconsin Muskie Expo there. So we're going to have a booth, and it's kind of our first go around with that, but we're looking forward to that experience.
Man, that's cool. So, just for the people that have been watching you guys for a couple years now, you guys are super popular. If you haven't watched them, or if you've not subscribed, you can go to one of their videos here on the app or search them on YouTube, or go, what is burning8s.com as well, correct?
Yep. So we're on Instagram and Facebook, and we got at Burning Eights is Instagram, and then burning8s.com is our website. So
yeah,
one other thought too, as far as that expo, we're going to be giving a seminar on Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m. So we're just going to be doing like a question and answer style seminar. So if there's fans that are around the Wausau area or willing to travel, we'd love to see them there and bring some questions along. We'll try to answer as many as we can. So
absolutely, man, that's so cool to just get out there and be able to meet people, you know, because it's
and I talk and
we've talked about this off air about how awesome it is and how much you appreciate the support of the people that are subscribing and watching. You know,
oh, it's I mean, that's what keeps us rolling right now is, right. I mean, it's something we did initially just to kick off. I mean, we came into this sport, I mean, not sport, but this industry, right. if you want to call it, it's completely green. I mean, we just started putting out videos just to share our experiences mm-hmm. and why we musky fished, and people started subscribing. People started, you know, sending us messages, and then it was just very cool. And it's humbling, honestly, just because people enjoy watching what we're putting out.
Yeah.
And that'll be the cool part about the expo is to get, you know, more hands on, more, and actually shake hands with fans, and should be fun. So I'm
yeah. And one thing too, I would say, and you and I have talked about this previously, of I think my biggest takeaway from watching Burning Eight stuff is you guys are just so good as boat mates, and it's like really a good view of how you should function with your boat partner, and just like a lot of team fishing, because you guys have a big crew, you know, you've got multiple people there, sometimes multiple boats, and it's just like really neat opposed to most things that you're watching, like one guy or just his partner. You know what I'm sure. saying? So it's neat yeah. to be able to see that and just see that coordination, and you know, it's really it's very familiar, like when you just go on a trip with your buddies. You know, and that's mm-hmm. a neat aspect, and really, really just a different take on things. So, man, another thing, and I'm going to hit on here because I'm excited about it, is you've got some merch coming out. I'm going to be repping it down here in Tennessee, but you've got some stuff available, some cool clothing. What's going yeah. on there, man?
Yes. So we just launched a pre-order a couple of weeks ago, finally, for Burning Eight's logo gear. And we cool. had, you know, people asking for multiple, I mean, it's been a long time coming. Mm-hmm. I said it in our video that when we released it, and it's been the last couple of years, we've been kind of working on it. We finally pinned some stuff down and released the pre-order a couple of weeks ago. And then we're going to be getting that stuff shipped out to our, to the buyers real soon here. And I mean, you can head over to our website, burnandace.com. We got the logo gear there right now and available for purchase, and then we're going to be adding some more designs in the near future here. So
very
that's
cool.
kind of a aspect that I've always wanted to pursue. And when people start asking to wear the logo, I mean, it was like, wow, this is cool.
Oh, and, yeah, absolutely, man. There's just not enough stuff like that in the sport. You know, it's
sure,
just,
yeah.
And that's awesome, because it's like for years, our options are just wearing brands. You know what I'm saying? I know you guys are yep. a brand, but it's not like, here's this brand that's totally isolated to X tackle company or Z tackle company, opposed to, you know, repping some guys that you, and you know, some guys you enjoy watching what they're doing. I think that's really neat. And I hope hopefully we see more of that, you know, where it's yeah. just like, you know, 'cause I'm just not a logo guy where I'm like going to run around in a Rapala shirt all day long, you know,
right. so right. That's, yeah. Yeah, right.
repping some giant company that doesn't care about you, opposed to if you're repping some Burning Eight stuff, these guys will email you back, you know.
Yeah, that's right. We try to as much as we can, we're replying to comments yeah. and messages, and it's just awesome. It's cool to see them come in. So
yeah, if you're gonna wear musky merch, wear it from people that are real people and not some mega corp. So, but very cool, man. Well, so we're gonna just jump into the meat and potatoes. You are a brave enough man to join me for the Ask a Pro here on Musky 360. We love getting you guys' questions. We get tons of questions here, and it's always fun to answer. I can't think of a better pro to have on here to jump in with a question. So up first, we have Jeff. Jeff says, I'm looking for a new musky rod. What do you think is the best all-round musky rod? What do you think, Ross?
Well, that's, yeah, it's an interesting, I mean, it's a good question.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know Joe mm-hmm. Bucher just recently did a vlog on that specific topic,
absolutely.
Which is definitely something to check out and get some answers as far as that goes. But, you know, as far as what our experience and what we use, I mean, a great all-around rod is, I mean, for us, we use Chaos Tackle, mm-hmm. the Assault Sticks. It's a swap model. So, you know, rod length, I think, is very dependent. A lot of personal preference, but mm-hmm. we use 9-footers. I mean, it depends like what you're fishing out of for a boat, how high up off the water you are.
Yeah.
But I prefer a 9-footer. Gives you a little extra leverage casting, makes the figure eights easier. You can make bigger turns to keep that fish glued on that bait. But yeah, it's, you know, that SWAT is kind of an all around bait. It's not going to throw your heavy, heavy rubber baits, mm-hmm. but it's going to do your topwaters, you know, bucktails, Suix, all the, you know, the end crankbaits. Works great for that. So, I mean, it's, like I said, it's personal preference. I mean, that yeah. SWAT is considered an extra, it's considered an extra heavy as far as the power, but, mm-hmm. That's primarily, I mean, that's my go-to rod as far as, you know, like I said, the bucktails, topwaters. I mean, for bigger blades, we're throwing an extra heavy, which is the Shock and Awe from the Assault Sticks.
Yeah.
And that just has a little bit more backbone. I mean, for running the big rubber baits and then, you know, pulling figure eights with bigger blades and whatnot. So I guess hopefully that kind of helps answer.
Yeah. I mean, the Assault Sticks, all the Chaos rods, I mean, those are killer. I'll tell you, in just my opinion, I don't think there's a bad brand of rods out right now. It's yeah, I mean, like it's such a golden age for musky gear, you know. I mean,
right?
There's so much good stuff.
There's it's from all ends of the spectrum too, yeah. as far as what you want to spend on a rod.
Right, that's what I'm thinking is price. Yeah, price point, and I'll tell a secret. I've told it on the podcast before. I throw the Bulldog Predator rods all the time. They're like $100. And people will see them on the boat and they go, you're fishing those? I go, this is like far superior to crap we had back in the day when we had 6.6s. And I go, I can break this over my knee and not think twice. You know?
Right.
You go, yeah, it's just, there's not, I mean, even if like, if you can get sub $100 musky rods, which is crazy. You know, yep. there's some of the stuff that's just, it's crazy.
I think, you know, each, as far as rod goes, I mean, rods go, there's a, you have each different, as far as price points has its uses, mm-hmm. but I mean, from an entry level, I mean, if you're looking for, you know, just to get rolling, I mean, you really don't have to spend that much on a rod just to get into the sport, you know, 100, 150 bucks, maybe, you know, up to 200.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you're getting a solid rod that's going to, it's going to last. It's going to hold up. And it's, you know, the whole, you can go overboard, I think, too, with rods. I mean, personally, we, you know, Jake and I, we each have three of them, mm-hmm. but I mean, is it really necessary? I mean, you can buy like that, you know, a 9-foot extra heavy and just start chucking baits, and it's going to get you into the sport. It's going to get you started, and it's going to be there for what you need.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you're spot on. And I mean, I'll just say it, which I'll say what nobody else wants to say. I think it's a lot of phooey and a lot of crap with the, you got to have 8 million rods. I mean, mm-hmm. and I'm not knocking any brands. I'm not repping any brands on that front. I just go, you know what? I can go out and guide 200 some days a year throwing two rods. I don't pay any attention to what it says on the rod where it says, this is meant for this amount of ounces or the weight classes and all that crap. If it'll throw it, it'll throw it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I fish just a straight heavy and I'm sitting here going, okay, I can huck a pounder or I can throw like a bass size crank on it, you know, as long right. as it, and also too, though, but you hit the thing, which is personal preference. You know what I'm saying? Cause mm-hmm. it's like, you know, it's got to feel right and you got to have the right action and all that stuff. But I think a lot of it is just, we would be led to believe that we got to have 8 billion rods when we don't. And I like what you're right. saying is like price point and having some quality stuff. That like the chaos, like you said, you guys are throwing chaos. Those are just solid. You know, that there's right. so many great, just killer rods out there that you can't go wrong, but cool, man.
Yeah. And I would say too, as far, I mean, length does matter. I mean, there's absolutely. Definitely times where I'm running, like I said, running 9-footers, but there are times in the boat where if I'm running, you know, twitching a crankbait or Suic or working some other, you know, like a jerkbait like that, I would probably prefer to have a shorter rod mm-hmm. in those circumstances. But I mean, it still gets the job done without spending, like without having 8 million rods, like you said. So.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I mean, that's my thing. And I think your thought process is the same way, same where mine is like, let's keep this real, you know, keep it real mm-hmm. and go. I might sacrifice a little bit here and a little bit there, but I didn't have to buy like 8 rods.
Right.
I think 3 rods is completely reasonable, but when it's just like, let's have seven, eight, nine rods that are all crazy expensive. It's just why, you know what I'm saying? I can think of a lot cooler stuff I can buy than like six more rods. But you know, I as far as like getting back to the heart of Jeff's question, if you really want to delve into it, like Ross mentioned, Joe did a long vlog where he talks about all the aspects of it. And his, you know, I don't even agree with Joe on that. Everybody's got their own take. Joe's definitely like the golf club analogy, where I need the right golf club for each situation. Me, I give me a broom handle and a reel and I'll catch something. But yeah, you know, everybody ends up in different camps. But I think you nailed it, Ross, where you were like, you said like 9 footers, but I would say, depending on your gunwale height of your boat, the size of your boat, how big you are physically is going to change this
exactly.
too, is 8'6" to 9'. That's sort of like,
I agree.
I think that's another thing. I'm tall. I'm big. I have been complaining for years about rod handles. I actually have to take my, the reason I fish cheap rods, I actually take my rear grip, cut them off and make them longer so I can actually cast these things, so I don't have the butt of the rod digging in my armpit for 12 hours a day. You know, you've got to find, and I think the reason the musky rod question comes up so much is everybody's looking for an answer for a question that's actually a personal question. You know,
true. I mean, yeah, it is. And that's, I mean, at least hopefully our answer kind of helps steer in the right direction and gets, you know, and then it becomes, you know, it gets you a good starting point with, you know, as far as getting the all around rod. And then from there, you kind of tweak your, you know, say, well, you know, I think 8 foot would work better for me, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, you can kind of tweak it from there.
To get on the let's just get off on that tangent, because I really, you know, I'm just spitballing here. It's like when we're doing these Q&As. Okay, so to answer that, we're saying this is a personal thing. You made a really good point with this is a personal choice. So what are some stuff maybe we should avoid? What are what stuff sucks when it comes to a musky rod? What do you think? Because I'm going to throw out here, I would be making sure that the reel seat's not a piece of crap, A.
Right.
I've had rods like that where if you crank it down and you're going the nut or whatever you want to call it, the little crank down to crank down your reel, if that thing doesn't feel like it's well built, it's going to be a piece of crap.
I would agree with the reel seat's kind of big for me as far as, you know, when you're a lot, I've had rods, you know, when I was growing up that I was using that when I used to crank, I could feel the reel wiggling in the reel seat. And it wasn't necessarily because it was worn out either. You know what I mean?
Dude, you said, have you ever had one break where the reel just slumps over to the side?
Not yet.
I had it happen. I was sitting, it's the only rod I had on the boat. And I was like, oh my God. But I got a trick for that, but I will save that for another podcast and I'll fix that. So check your reel seat. I'm trying to think of other stuff.
I think another big thing, and talking from experience, is the guides, what they're made of.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had my sister, actually, she had guides that were made out of ceramic, or they're ceramic coated, or I'm thinking that's what they were.
Like, so there's ceramic on the inside where the lines actually,
correct. Whereas, so basically, another good point is to always check your gear. To make sure, you know, there's no flaws in it, you know, even just from use, because I think what happened with hers was she had a hook that hit the eyelet at one point and that eyelet chipped, and she hooked up on her biggest muskie by far. And it's actually one of our original videos that we put out.
Oh, dude, I've seen, it's like there's sort of an island in the background and she like, it might be an island or a point. I don't know which video you're talking about. Yeah.
Yep. But she hooked up on that after a backlash, and she was fighting the fish just for a little bit, and all of a sudden the line snapped, and we were looking at each other like, what just happened?
Right.
Well, she was heartbroken by that. Well, we thought, you know, line, you know, like a bad knot or something, weak spot in the line. Well, come to find out after examining her rod, that guide had a nick in it, and that's what cut the line, because you could see the line frayed on it still.
Oh, God.
So that's one thing. I mean, pay attention to your guides. Make sure they're high quality. It was like a cheaper musky rod, but I mean, it was also well worn too. So
yeah, I would be watching, like you said, for maintenance, from a maintenance standpoint, that's important for sure. If you have the ceramic guides, but also too, I don't know if like on budget stuff, you can avoid that too much, but just be watching for that. I mean, like, I guess, you know, everybody's sort of looking for what they should get. And so So like Ross said, good guides on your rod that are not chintzy and crappy. Check your reel seat. I'll tell you flatly, I know a lot of guys get hung up way too much on like handle material and stuff. I mean, wind grip is getting really popular in bass fishing. I don't think it matters. I would be looking at the best reel seat, the best overall rod composition. Don't get hung up on handles. You know, it doesn't matter if it's EVA or if it's real cork or if it's that faux cork or if it's got a wrap on it. What you said with your eyelets, what we're talking about with the reel seat, that's going to be first and foremost. And then I think you said it earlier, and we'll get off this topic, but you said about like rod action, you're throwing like extra heavies. I think if you could only have like one rod, it's going to be like a heavy to an extra heavy. If we're going to like,
I would agree. I mean, that makes a good, it's a pet. And I've noticed too that manufacturers run differently. I mean, as far as like an extra heavy for someone, like say Chaos is different than an extra heavy for somebody else. And I think you'll find that, but I think it's a good starting point.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. So,
and one thing I'll say is this, cause like, it doesn't, to me, I don't have a rod deal. I don't care. I don't care what I'm throwing, but what's important to me is that it works for me. This is why it's so important to go to Raleigh and Helens, go to Muskie Shop, go to wherever. I don't care where you go. Go and spend time with these things. I think a lot of the horror stories we hear is people buying them like sight unseen on the internet.
Sure.
And it's like a personal thing. It has to feel good in your hands and all this stuff. So just go spend the time on it. You will know what's right when you get there. We'll get off the rod topic and move on to Bob. Yep. Bob says, I have a limited budget and I'm looking to upgrade my gear for next season. I can either expand my rod and reel choices to include a jerk bait setup or upgrade my sonar unit to one that has GPS and side imaging. Okay, so he's saying either I can buy a new rod and reel for jerk baits, or I can upgrade my sonar unit with GPS and side imaging. He says currently I don't have either. So he doesn't have a jerk bait rod and reel setup, and he doesn't have a GPS. I'll just go out and say, I bet you got a rod that can throw jerk baits already. What do you think?
It kind of rolls from this last question here. On how I kind of, or we kind of touched on that, you can find that all around versatile rod. And I think in this question, I think the real game changer is going to be GPS and side imaging.
Are you running side imaging on your rig?
Yeah, Jake's he's got the new, he's got Mega Imaging on his with the Helix 10. Uh-huh. And that was very, very eye opening this year.
Oh, yeah.
And It's very cool. As far as like, cause we fish a lot of weed edges, a lot of weed beds in northern Wisconsin, and even just based off of our video that we released this week from Green Bay, it's crazy what you can learn. As far as, you don't have to be on top of structure now. Mm-hmm. You can see it off to your side and say, okay, hey, there's the weed edge right there.
Yeah. I mean,
and it helps for running along them or how you're working them. And it also we're side imaging muskies, you know, out on Green Bay.
Yeah.
Finding them and saying, well, there's some sitting right there.
Dude, yeah. So, you're going to hear the same from me, Bob, 100%. If it's side imaging or a new rod and reel, get side imaging, period. I mean, like you're saying, dude, I've caught, and it was just a week or two ago, I run low ramps and I'm trolling through an area. I'm always watching my side imaging, right? Marked him, and he's about 40 feet off from where we were. Just marked him. I went, okay, how deep would I think? I know how deep that area he was on. We just trolled in the wrong little stretch there. I said, all right, guys, we're going to turn around. I marked the fish on my – I marked it on the fish, right? Just dropped down to the cursor, put a dot where he was, turned the boat, came back around and caught him.
Yeah,
cool. That's all you need to know. Like you said, Green Bay or big open bodies of water, man, that's so powerful on your weed edges, dude. I think to anybody that's listening, if you don't have side imaging on your boat, it's worth the investment because, I learned things about a body of water that I spent years on,
that's true.
I mean, there's places where, let's say me and you're out on my boat, Ross, and I was like, 2 years ago and I said, okay, over here it looks like this. And I would tell clients this. I'm like, okay, this is sort of what we're coming into, and here's where this is, and here's where that is. If we're fishing structure or a combination of structure and cover. And I'd be like, you know, this, and I was off. You know, it's just like you can't argue with the side imaging when it goes, okay, that tree lays in here like this. There's the break line. Here's where the weed edge is, and there's a pile of rocks over here you never knew was there. That's it, dude. That's it.
Yeah, and I, you know, as long as he's got a good quality rod set up to start with, I mean, I think that could be a game changer as far as side imaging and GPS, because that's one thing that I've always enjoyed having on locators, whether it's Jake's, you know, or his Hummingbird stuff, or even when I was growing up with my dad's. It's like marking, putting waypoints down when you're catching or seeing fish, I think is really eye opening to say. I mean, it sheds so much more light on where you're contacting fish and allows you to go back on productive spots.
Absolutely. And God, this even goes into like Joe's vlog he did a couple weeks ago about map marking. And we're looking at like you said, you're basically almost talking patterning, because you're going, okay, like if I'm marking this fish here and then I mark another one over here, you can look at your waypoints and go, okay, what is the corollary between these two marks? You know, and you have that in real time going, okay, 1 + 1 = 2. So if these two fish were holding 8 to 10 feet, I can drive across the lake and probably contact fish at 8 feet. It's flatly totally worth your time. You gotta have GPS. To me is like you have to have it. It's almost like I don't even want to go fool around if I don't have it, if I'm on a big body of water, you know.
Right Well, even like take for smaller lakes, you know, for example, like years and years ago, I remember we were marking fish. This was like off of a sandbar. And it wasn't, it was just, you know, me and my dad and my grandpa fishing, and we're like, you know, every time we'd see a fish there, we'd you know, lose a fish or catch a fish, and it's like, what we had waypoints down there. And I went back, and this is like a couple of years later or whatever, started looking at lake maps, and I might, like, especially like using Navionics on my phone, just kind of bored one night looking over the lake maps, and all of a sudden I see, I'm like, that's that spot. I'm like, that is actually a point, a subtle point coming off that weed edge and off that sandbar. And I'm like, now it's making sense. You know, if we went to mark those fish or took note of where those fish were showing up, it's like, it would have been harder to put two and two together, saying, well, that's a key spot that fish are relating to.
Dude. This is what happens every time you and I talk, we get off on tangents, but I love it. You know what I'm saying? 'Cause you just brought up something that doesn't relate to Bob's question, but this just is just, you just said something that's, it's very poignant. Okay. So the research doesn't stop once you catch the fish. And like what you did was like, you caught the fish and then you went back and you started looking at Navionics, which I keep Navionics on my phone. It is a app. It's another app you can get from the app store, which is just, it includes all the maps from, I guess, Navionics, pretty much for a lot of regions. So you can sit here and research on the phone. But what you're talking about looking at the maps, and also too, looking at Google Maps and Google Earth. I'll tell you, man, if you guys listening aren't doing that on your bodies of water, you're crazy, because
it does help.
It helps because it brings it. Like you just said, it tied things together for you. I do that all the time. Also too, hint, hint, you can, if you look, it depends on when they like take the satellite photos and stuff. There's places in Canada where I've found new reefs and rocks I didn't know were there because I was looking on Google Earth and zooming in and seeing dark spots and stuff. So that's a really great addition. Another thing, like you said, Navionics, or whether you're going the Google Earth route or not, you can actually mark stuff on there. It'll give you the GPS coordinates, and you can drop those into your units too, for you guys that are looking to add stuff to, say, your Canadian trips or stuff up on their Shield Lakes. Be doing that research now where you're looking at these maps and pouring over them going, hey, this point does this, you know. And people ask all the time, and I know people ask you when you guys are doing musky shows like this expo you're doing coming up and all this stuff, and questions is like, you know, how do you find this stuff? How do you find neck downs? How do you find where weed edges are, all this stuff, just doing your homework, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just
and like right now is the perfect time to do your homework. I mean, it's the off season, you know, we're locked up tight up here in Wisconsin,
not down here, baby.
I can imagine. So, but yeah, now is like, it's the perfect time. And I always enjoy, I mean, off season, it's not really a break for as much for me now, just kind of as far as we're keeping up with videos and filming, but
yeah,
it was always fun to just pour over maps and just figure out, it's like, why is this spot holding fish? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, research a new lake and say, you know, here's an underwater point. It's got weeds on it. I want to fish it this year.
We have now, me and you have an idea for our next podcast together, because we need to just, we need to just dish on this, because I'm holding back. I know you're holding back on some secrets on how to break that stuff down, but we will move on and we will try to remember that idea. The next one up is Adam. Adam says, I have a lake that has quite a few large mid lake rock humps. Well, I promise you folks, I didn't put these in order or anything. We didn't know they were going to come this way, because we're just talking about that. So Adam says he has a lake that has quite a few mid lake rock humps and drop offs near deep water. I want to start targeting some of these areas this year with crankbaits, like you've discussed in previous podcasts. My question is, what periods or months and water temps during musky season are you looking to fish these humps? Just looking to find out when I should focus on these kinds of areas. I'm in Wisconsin. The lake has Cisco's and is a clear body of water. Hope this helps. Thank you. So Adam wants to know how to fish mid-lake rocks and humps in clear water in Wisconsin. What do you think, buddy?
Yeah, I mean, that's number one. I like mid-lake rock humps. I mean, I like mid-lake structure to begin with, because a lot of times I feel it holds bigger fish. I mean, not always, but I feel like a lot of bigger fish relate to that mid-lake structure. And I mean, we take into account, as far as like water temps and, you know, when you should be fishing that. I mean, it really depends like how deep you're talking. You know, I mean, obviously it always seems that, you know, muskies are shallow to start off the year as they're coming off the spawn, and then they, you know, gravitate out to their summer ranges where they, you know, they're sitting, then they're moving off of weed edges, moving out to, you know, more suspended and then, or mid-lake structure. But I think you're going to have, if there's bait there, mm-hmm. you're going to have fish there probably year round. I mean, we've seen higher correlation. I mean, maybe this is because we tend to fish it more in the fall,
mm-hmm.
but mid-lake rock humps have produced well for us in the fall. And that was actually one of the articles that when I wrote for the app, that uh-huh. was a mid-lake rock structure that we had a crazy bite window on in, you know, beginning of October.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm totally in agreement with you that this is a year round thing. This is, I would be remiss if I didn't say, like, in Canada, when I'm up there, like, some of the biggest fish we've fooled with are on those rocks. They're either on mid lake stuff, they're on reefs, and the majority of the muskies are in the weed beds, but the big girls are out there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an access to deep water thing, you know, where, you know, in a flick of a tail, they can be in 40 feet of water or 20 feet of water. Usually these things are related pretty close to deep water. But I'm with you, dude. If you're looking for some of the biggest fish in the system, getting on those humps and drop offs that are in relation to deep water, and like you said, I was just gonna say, like, he was asking like the periods and the months and the water temps. I would just start adding it into every trip, Adam. You know,
I think it's structured to work that you could literally work it year round,
mm-hmm.
just because of. I mean, I think part of, you know, in that circumstance, he mentioned Cisco's and it being clear water, which for us, Cisco-based lakes, I think, tend to be a tougher fish at times. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, if you have mid-lake structure, mid-lake rock humps, and you have fish that are chasing these Cisco's throughout the year, I wouldn't be surprised to have those fish, you know, settle down on a rock hump throughout the season, mm-hmm. you know, here, you know, after they get done feeding or chasing these fish or whatever, they come back to this rock hump, hang out there, and, you know, then they're back chasing Cisco's or whatever. So if you could intercept some of those fish, I mean, that would be game on. I mean, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I would say, we're dealing with clear water too, is boat control and boat positioning. you know, back it off a mm-hmm. little bit. I like a little bit. If I'm fishing clear water, I'm actually thinking ahead of time that I need a little bit more distance for these fish to overtake the bait. You know, if you're dealing with spooky fish at all, sure. You know, and
that's an interesting point. Yeah.
You know, whereas if, you know, if I'm in tannic water or stained water or whatever, you know, I don't feel like they're going to spook as easily, but just right. back it off a little bit. The biggest thing I'd say, and it's like, man, we're just rolling in order. The same thing we were saying about checking this stuff out on Google Earth and checking it out on maps is really get a good idea of what these humps look like and how they're orientated in your lake. And that will allow you, say, when you go into this, you go, okay, I know where the high spots are. I know where the things are sort of dropping off, and do your research on the composition of these mid-lake rock humps. And that'll allow you to have really good boat control and sort of overcome any kind of clear water spook you're dealing with. So if you don't have to be right up on it to understand, hey, it's tapering here. You can be, you know, a bomb cast off that thing. I feel like, at least my personal experience in clear water, knowing how that's orientated, allowing me to make bomb casts that are still accurate is how I'm able to put those fish in the boat. But just do your research on that. And like he said, with crankbaits, I couldn't speak to like all the Wisconsin lakes with Cisco's, but what are you thinking? Like, what's some good crankbait, or what would be your go-to crankbaits on those mid-lake rock humps?
You know, depending on how deep they are. I mean, like for crankbaits, we run a lot of cranebaits, but mm-hmm. we twitch them more so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have to have, you know, obviously, you'd have to have a little bit deeper diving, I'm assuming, based on what he's talking. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, I mean, quite honestly, like one of my go-to as far as fishing that would be rubber. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would definitely keep that in your arsenal as far as Medusas yeah. or Bulldogs and, or X-Toads yeah. and get them, you know, there's different ways. I mean, you could work that hump, you could cast up onto it, kind of work that, you know, the top end, but I mean, still staying off a little bit, but work mm-hmm. that top end with rubber. And then you could literally, you know, go back on top of it and cast out and work that break more. I mm-hmm. mean, there's two, you know, that's two different ways to work it.
Absolutely. I mean, and the one thing, like when I'm thinking like big rock humps areas, sort of like I have in my head, I'm thinking visualizing to what he's asking is big rubber. And then the other trick is like with the crankbaits, I love it, when I'm thinking rock humps, like you said, shallow raiders and crane baits, to me, I'm looking a little deeper diving curve. I like yep. to take depth raiders. And if those fish don't react, let's say that you start off with rubber, right? Or you start, yep. may even throw a topwater there. If they don't react and you're not getting action, is taking a depth raider in there and ticking and clicking in there. Reel it down till it's hitting the rock. Let it come up. Bam, bam. And just walk it down those edges. And, you know, that'll allow you to really probe pretty much that whole water column there. I mean, if you're throwing big rubber there, if it's shallow and it's flats though, those crane bait shallow raiders are still good there to just bang into the rocks. I mean, that's just mm-hmm. just anything you can do to sort of trigger a strike. I think right. Ross, you're like me, it doesn't matter what he came on as long as we got him in the net, you know.
True. So, true.
All right, man, our next one up is from Ron. Ron says, I want to learn how to fish the Bondi bait effectively. Do I always want to fish this just above the forage and bait? Is bouncing the bottom effective? I have had some Bondi experience, and we'll just jump in the fray and say this. I don't think there's a wrong way to fish it. What I've done with it is bottom bouncing, which is like getting in, let's say I'm in 15 to 18 feet of water, is just getting it like I hit the bottom, I reel up a little slack, so I know when I'm bringing my rod up and down that it's sort of going to tick bottom and come up. I've done that effectively on break lines, done that effectively around standing timber. The one thing I would say, Ron, is fishing the Bondi bait the what I would consider to be the correct way, quote unquote, takes a lot of really accurate boat control. And that's what's going to really probably make the difference for you is like if you're trying to target, let's say we're trying to target 18 feet depth break lines, is if you're trying to present that thing on those breaks, is the boat has to stay there. You know, you can't be coming off of it, coming off the break, back onto the break. It's not like trolling where we're coming in and out of the break. Like, you need to like consistently stay at that target depth so your presentation's right. You know, if that makes any sense. So like when I'm raising and lowering this rod, it's right. It's either ticking the bottom or it's bouncing just there above. But then on the other hand, I know dudes that just throw them out and reel them in like bucktails and catch fish, you know, with the blade on the back on the classic Bondi bait. And I know they've made some other baits. Ross, do you have any input on the Bondis? I don't know. Do you fish those much or is
not,
that
not often? I mean, I would have to defer to you on this one. I mean, that's one. Jake will run a tube every once in a while, which is kind of a similar presentation.
Right.
But I mean, that's one thing that I've never really delved into.
Well, and it's one of those things is I'll tell you my opinion on jigging is I'm not doing it unless I gotta. That's where I'm at. I'm like going, if it's down to a jigging bait, let's go home, you know? Let's go to another lake. Let's go do something else.
It's definitely an effective presentation.
It is.
And that, we've been seeing. And
there's dudes that are into it and guys that are not into it. I'm not personally into it. I've done it. I would say this, the strikes are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like the fish I've caught doing it, I particularly remember a 38 incher that felt like a 79 incher, you know, this thing. Yeah. And I went, you know, I've been jigging this thing up and down for an hour and a half and it rocked my world. So that was exciting. Cause you know, I don't know if I stuck it right in his face and he said, get out of my face. But it was a impressive strike. And I know that, these baits work. But like I said, in my experience, it's been my strikes come when it's really good boat control, when I'm controlling the drift of the boat too, whether it be from wind or current, and really just like pacing the drift. So what I've seen and when I'm guiding people, and we are jigging, is that if the bait is getting behind the boat, you're dragging it behind the boat when you're jigging, it's not quite as effective if you're pacing it nicely where it's a vertical presentation. The other thing I would say is this on like, I've done it on cave run and standing timber is that's really good against like tree trunk, standing timber to jig it right there next to it. But those fish I've caught there have not come off the bottom. They've come off of like jigging it at 15 feet in 20 feet of water or something like that. So to answer your question, Ron, you're asking is it does always have to be above the bait or bouncing bottom? Both are effective.
The other thing you can't, I mean, I remember hearing one example of casting out Bondis and then just like basically ripping them in, but they would bounce off the bottom as you were reeling them in or retrieving them in.
Uh-huh.
So you're working them essentially like, you know, a pull pause type bait that, you know, like a Medusa or whatever, but you're contacting bottom and it was working. It was catching fish.
Yeah. Once again, I don't care how we get him in the net. I think too, it's something that you've talked about before and I've answered before is like, you know, looking for the specific presentation, it's always going to differ on where you're at. It just is. I mean, I know flatly the way that I fish some of my gliders here in the South versus the way I fish them up north is different. You just got to sort of dial in on your body of water as far as what they want. And I don't think, I mean, if you find a muskie in a rude enough mood, I think you'd catch him on your ball cap if you wanted to just throw your hat out there. So
certain days,
other days that it's impossible. So I think what it takes is just like focus. If you want to effectively fish those Bondi baits, spend the time and develop a retrieve that's working on your body of water through trial and error. And just to get off on the tangent here just a little bit, the way that I sort of break that down, let's say I'm trying to figure out a new bait or a new bait style, is I will allot certain amounts of time for certain ways of fishing it. And I try to do that under prime condition. So I'm going to fish it day one. I'm going to fish it under low light conditions in this manner. Then if that doesn't produce, I'm going to try to keep doing it in different ways under prime conditions. And that will sort of allow you to see what works and what doesn't. It's sort of like in science, you're always looking for a controlled experiment. You never really have a controlled experiment in musky fishing, but that's the best I've got for you, is like, don't discount a certain presentation until you've done it under prime conditions, you know? And yeah. So that's the best way, like, that's the way I play around with new baits to find out what's working. But that's what I would do, Ron, is try it in different ways and don't give up on it until you find what works. The next up is Mark. Mark says, is it a good idea to remove the treble hooks on a crankbait, is it a good idea to remove one of the treble hooks on a crankbait to increase hooking ratio? What do you think?
That's a good question, because that's something we've actually experimented with, Jake and I, as far as with, I mean, we started running cranes, the crankbaits, and our hookup percentage wasn't, I mean, we were contacting a lot of fish, and then we started losing them, and we're like, what is going on here? And it was very frustrating. So what we ended up doing was, now this is like a 6 or 7 inch crankbait, which is obviously different than like a 9 or something, like, or, you know, something bigger like that. But what we ended up deciding on doing was we would pull out the center treble hook. So the cranes have three, so you got a front, center, and rear. And we would pull out that center treble, and then we would upgrade our hook sizes just a little bit. And we started keeping more fish pinned, which was encouraging to see. And, I don't know the, direct reasoning from it, but it seems to be working for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one thing I'd say too is, like, on a crane bait, they're underhooked.
And size wise.
And that's from, I'm a West Virginia boy. So the family got to fish with Bill Crane and even go to Canada with Bill. And I can tell you that flatly that comes from creek fishing in West Virginia, where if you caught a 45, you were the man, you know what I'm saying? Those baits, like when he was building and designing those baits originally, it really wasn't contingent. The thought process of catching lunker, monster, big fish was not in the thought process. Whereas, I just feel that they're underhooked if you're fishing up north or you're fishing on big bodies of water. I'd go with three of the KVD 3-0s. Same thing that I do with my shallow raiders for a little bit better hookup. But I think with that bait in particular, I think you need to be changing the hooks. And I like you guys, and it's just same thing. You solved the problem in a different manner than I did, but with a crane bait, I'm ditching the stock hooks off the rip. This also,
I was just actually talking to Jake about that the other day. And yeah, that's what we've switched them all to 3 or 4-0. Mm-hmm. And, it's, you have to be careful with that though, because it really can change how the bait suspends, how it hangs or rises, whatever it might be. So, I mean, that's kind of the right size that works for those crane baits. We also run big game slammers, stuff like that. But I mean, just obviously you can change your hook size, but pay attention to how it changes the action of the bait.
Oh, absolutely. And which is we can crawl down. We're not going to, cause it'd be take us forever, but that's a thing that Joe talks about all the time is you can augment your crankbaits. They become suspending, they become sinking, they become quick rise, they could become slow rise. That's sort of the fun part of playing with these hooks, where you can find the day where, man, they're really moving on shallow raiders, or the next day they're really moving on crane baits, but you can't get them hooked up. That's when you start playing with hooks and really start changing that. And you go, that's the magic trick to get them to strike. So,
but right, an example in this last year, it was a little slow for us. And we were Jake and I were both casting, and Jake walks to the back of the boat, pulls out some baits, and he starts switching all the hooks, and then he's twitching them in, and he's looking at the action. We're both kind of examining it, and that's how he decided on, this is the size hook to go with to keep that similar action. But to upsize them. And that was, that's just an example of taking, where you got a lull in fishing.
Yes.
To take advantage of the time still, just to improve your success rate, hopefully.
Get me and you on the phone, we can go in 8 million different ways, but you just said something I gotta touch on here, which is like, that's the people ask all the time, like, how do you figure this out, or how to do this, or how to do that. is taking like exactly what you guys did, take that time on the water to sit there and fiddle with things. Go, okay, we're not catching anything anyway, or hey, it's a crappy day, or hey, it's this. Don't just write it off. Utilize that time to work on your presentations and work on augmenting your baits. Cause like you said, knowing it on the water and like comparing it, changing the hooks, changing the split rings is how you find those magic recipes, right? You know, for doing that. And this just seems like I talk to guys and it's just like, I get it. I'm there to cast from sun up to sundown too. But sometimes you just got to stop the world and go, okay, I'm going to play with baits for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, and work on presentations, work on dialing them in. And I mean, you guys did the same thing I've done there in the past where it's like, okay, let's take the bait. Let's put a bunch of different hooks on it. What does this look like? What did this look like? You know, and just play with the options. So sorry to get off on a tangent, but that's good stuff because I just don't think, I don't think a lot of people take enough time to do that and just really dig in. All right. The next one up is from Kyle. Kyle says, I absolutely love the recent vlogs and podcast on reading new waters. I want to put this new knowledge to use and start coloring up a few maps. He says, my big question is, where are you guys finding these maps? He says, I live in southern part of Ontario, so it might be slightly different than in the States, but any advice would be greatly appreciated. So what he's talking about in Joe's recent vlog, if you haven't watched it, you need to check it out. Joe's talking about how he breaks down the littoral zone in lakes and reservoirs, which is essentially the vegetative part of a lake. So where vegetation is going to grow, the littoral zone is usually typically that 10 feet to 0 feet area on the edges. And Kyle, the way we've found that, at least here in the States, is you can buy, obviously, what is it? God, there's those stupid books in Wisconsin where it's like they break down every county. You know what I'm talking about? The little books, they've got the spiral binding.
Sportsman's Connections.
There you go. Thank you for the name.
That's what we use that a lot as far as exploring new water, right? And there's just to kind of get a beat on the lake as far as where submerged vegetation might be. And like, you know, like Joe noted in that vlog, you know, 10 feet or less in most bodies of water. I mean, we primarily focus on, I mean, one example was from a video this past summer that we filmed was 5 to 10 was kind of our happy medium to find these weed edges at. And that's where we started with.
Oh, absolutely.
But, I mean, that, you know, as far as resources, I think that's what he kind of asked for, right? As far
He's like looking that. He's in Canada, though, too, is where he's going for.
Right.
One thing that pops up into mind is, I think it's, let me even look. I know Raleigh and Helen sells them to the Hot Maps. Which you'll be able to find that. The thing I would just tell you is obviously a good Google search will help you out a little bit there. But, you know, you can find like Hot Maps of all these places that are topos. They might not be like 100% accurate on navigation for rocks and things of that nature, but that's where you're going to find it. Another thing I've done, if you can't find physical maps, and that's the thing, he's trying to find the actual breakdown maps, is you can actually Google a lot of these bodies of water and, you know, Google whatever lake, what catch of muskie. that'd be a good lake name, Lake Catch a Muskie. So you can Google Lake Catch a Muskie topographical map, and a lot of times you can find results online. If you're up against a barrel and you can't find the map to buy it, just print it out, you know, or print it out in sections, break it down, and at least give you an idea where you can sort of hone in on that. But like you said, was it Sportsman Connections there in the north?
Yep. I mean, they do Minnesota, they do Wisconsin. I know they do more lakes than that. I mean, there's
a billion. I
mean, yeah. So they do, that's a very good resource. I mean, especially because it's going to give you survey data. It's going to let you know, first of all, if there's muskies in the lake.
slightly helpful.
I mean, we do a lot of reading with that. And then also just like pouring over Navionics on our phone, Lake Master chips. I mean, that's where you're kind of, you know, you can color code your
GPS.
Your GPS to show you. I mean, like, so, you know, like, for example, like Jake's, the way he color coded it was that 5 to 10 foot range is color coded green.
Yeah.
So it kind of correlates with us as far as like possibility of weeds there. This lake has, you know, say, you know, it has submergent vegetation in it. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start exploring that 10 foot and under range with side imaging, sonar, you know, just to find, you know, the weeds.
Boom.
And the starting point. So
I just did a little of the Googling here, you can go to Kyle. I actually just pulled it up at fishinghotspots.com. We're not endorsed or affiliated with this website for listeners there, but I just pulled it up. They sell lake maps of Ontario. It might not have all your lakes, but I'm seeing some stuff here. You got Rainy, you got Eagle, you got all these other maps. So you might be able to find it on there, which is going to be the same thing as, like you said, Fisherman's Resources. But man, I'm totally on board with what you're saying, which is another tangent here, but setting up your GPS for that is super important.
Yep.
You know, like you're saying, color coding your maps, having that marked in some fashion where you go. Once again, and I mean, it's funny, like all our questions are sort of lining up, but you mentioned earlier about you almost like the patterning, like you were talking about your marking on your GPS, and we sort of got on that where it's like, if I marked a fish here and I marked a fish there, you can start seeing that even easier if you have your map color coded already. So let's say on your guys' trip, if you catch fish number one or contact fish number one and he's in the green zone and you contact another one, he's in the green zone, it pretty much narrows it down for you where you're going to fish that day. So that's a really smart move to do. There's a billion instructions too on the internet how to set your stuff up there. So, man, we got time for one more and we're going to go roll into it. Guy's named Joe from Wisconsin. Joe says, what is the best type of leader for plastics? So like deuces and bulldogs. He says, is fluorocarbon or steel better? Or do you think that muskies can still, see the steel leader in ultra clear water? So what's the best leader for big plastics? What do you think, Ross?
There's better technical answers for this. From a simplicity standpoint, I mean, I'll be honest, like we primarily run fluorocarbon pretty much no matter what bait we're. Now there, you know, to get into the specifics of it, yeah, I mean, there is certain leaders that you should be running based on your bait selection. But I mean, I've been running it for years. And to me, you know, switching out or having a lot of different rods, which it kind of goes back to from early in the show, it's tough. I mean, obviously it's tough to have a lot of rods in the boat or different setups, which is possible to do. And I think it is beneficial, but, you know, as far as switching out leaders, you know, that's time away from casting, but fluorocarbon has worked great for us for, you know, a lot of hours on the water, even running plastics, you know, and rubber. I would be interesting to see. I mean, as far as your answer,
I'm it's like talking to me about rods. I'm so just like, bleh. I'm where I'm at with leaders, fish what you have faith in. That's it. I mean, like, I caught it. I fished straight steel. That's all I ever have fished. It's pretty much what I fish every day is just a 13 inch straight steel. I'm talking piano wire, like, you know, not flexible. It's just a straight steel leader. And I've said, it's way better for glide baits. That's always my thing. It's a billion times better for glide baits. I had one get all kinky the other day. I didn't have any extras on the boat. My clients all want fluorocarbon generally, so I have really nice fluorocarbon leaders on it. I smacked on a fluorocarbon leader. I really didn't see a noticeable difference in my glide bait presentation.
Yep.
You know, and I'm sitting here going, I've been telling people for years, oh, it has to be. It doesn't matter. I don't know. I the one thing I'll tell you, and this is just being realistic about it. If the fish gets turned off from seeing your leader, please explain to me what he thought of the 7-0 treble hooks. That's where I'm at with
interesting,
it.
Interesting point. Yeah.
If the fish is leader shy, but he's not hook shy, that's where I'm at with the conversation on leaders. I think that at this point, I'm probably wrong. I'll be the first one to say it. Fish whatever you have faith in. If you have faith in fluorocarbon, fish it. If you like straight steel, fish it. You like multi-strand, fish it. As long as it's a quality leader that you can impart action in the bait, I think too, and I'm just getting on the tangent, like I said, about if they can see the leader, then how do we rectify that they still hit the bait because of the hooks or they didn't? The other thing is this, is I think, honestly, like, you know how you're sort of, and you said the same thing in the sort of thought process I have where you sort of beat around the bush a hair on, I know there's a better way, you know what I'm saying? Because you feel the same way I do about it. Like, here's what I do, is I think what matters is if you stick with one, right? So I guarantee you guys can fish crane baits, you can fish suics, you can fish medusas, you can fish glide baits with your fluorocarbon leaders, correct?
Which is what we do, yeah.
Right, 14 you inch. Fish them all on that.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and that's, I mean, they work. I mean, it's,
right.
Yeah, like we said, technically there is more to it,
BS.
Yes, but BS. You know, it's,
but I'm it's, over I mean, it.
For us, it's catching fish. And I think you know, the length of the leader is what's important.
I think
in some circumstances too, you don't want to get too long.
Right.
But you know,
well, what I'm getting at, and see what you think of this, is that if you pick one kind of leader, that's what you're going to use, right? You're going to be good at presenting all the baits with that leader.
Right. Yeah. I think, I mean, that's what we do. I mean,
fluorocarbon
works for us for everything that we're throwing.
Yeah. That's my thing. I'm eating crow on that. Cause I just did it a couple of days ago where I went, I won't have as good of action. My baits look the same. I went, am I fooling myself? But whatever, whatever. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm off on a big tangent here, but fish what you have faith in. That's where I'm at. And I'll shut up now, Ross. Sorry. I'm on my soapbox here, folks. But anyway, man, tell everybody again where you guys are going to be for this next Muskie Expo, buddy.
Yeah. So it's going to be Wausau, Wisconsin. It's the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. And it's a good turnout. I mean, there's a lot of other vendors there. We're going to have a booth there. We'll be selling apparel at the booth and just looking to talk to fans and just make some good contacts and talk muskies. I mean, that's what we like doing. Talking
absolutely.
Muskies.
Get out there and go meet everybody from the Burning Eights crew. Buy some merch, people. Support these guys. Support some of these cool guys in the sport. You know, you don't need another headlock. You need a Burning Eights hoodie. That's
we appreciate that. It's something fun we want to try and it's. So far, so good. We're hoping that we can keep taking it further and people enjoy what we're putting out as far as apparel and our videos. So.
Absolutely. And you guys will always be featured here on the app. Go out and check out the new video they just put up. Ross, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, my man. I enjoyed it.
And hey, thanks for asking me to be on.
Appreciate it. Yeah, man. I can't wait to have you on again. Obviously, we can sit here and mumble about muskies for hours on end.
Oh, for sure.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.